Halloween Sunset, An Our Flag Means Death Fic by The Widow Olivia, read by Little Fingies. I won't heal you when you need to be healed. This fic is rated mature, no archive warnings apply. Relationship, Blackbeard, Edward Teach, and Steed Bonnet. Summary: Ed and Steed set out to carve a jack-o'-lantern for the inn, and Ed reflects on love in a season of change. Some of the tags include anxiety, seasonal affective disorder, spiders, blood, and implied reference sex. Notes from the author. Fic title from Halloween Sunset by John Craggy. This fic is based on a prompt from Quaintly Fig's Spooky Season Prompt Generator, Something Witchy Afoot. Someone gets injured. Pumpkin carving and a bug are involved. Story element, caretaking. Happy Halloween. P.S. I have David Jenkins Halloween into 18th century pirate life.
I wanna dance with you underneath a Halloween sunset. I could be a scarecrow, baby. I could be your skeleton. I wanna heal you when you need to be healed. I won't heal you when you need to be healed.
Wee John said it had to be a turnip, Ed says, as he follows Steed through what's left of the back garden. Their home is far enough north that they have pesky seasons to contend with. Everything is turning brown, the air is growing sharper, and the clouds have thinned out to wisps on the horizon. If Ed still had a ship, he'd take it as a sign to head for warmer climes, maybe hole up somewhere to ride out any hurricanes, and then make easy pickings off of the ships blown off course. But he's retired, and that means he stays put, even when his instincts tell him to hoist the sails. Still, watching the little furrow in Steed's brow as he fusses over the messy, overgrown rows of rainbow chard and carrots, Ed can't imagine why he'd ever want to leave. We didn't grow any turnips because someone said they were tasteless blobs of sadness. Steed's furrow, a neat little crease between those two gorgeous hazel eyes, is now pointed squarely at Ed. My stance on eating turnips remains very fucking firm. Ed has eaten turnips just about every way you can eat them. Boiled, roasted, sautéed, fried, and they always, always carry the flavor of an unhappy childhood. One of his many sensible rules aboard ship was no turnips whatsoever, under any circumstances. Ivan always did make a nice rutabaga mash, though. But if we're going to carve this jack person, Wee John said it had to be a turnip. Steed sighs and bends down to attend to one of the beds. He's kitted out in his gardening attire, as he calls it. High, supple boots, breeches, a simple green vest, soft white shirt, and the largest, most ridiculous, wide-brimmed straw hat that Ed has ever seen. It's fucking charming. Yes, the hat is protecting his boyfriend's delicate ears from the last rays of October sunshine. But he'd really just like to get under there and kiss Steed till the hat flies off into the dusty tomato patch, and then pull him down till they're horizontal between the raised beds. Actually, Ed did do that exact thing 2 months ago, when the garden beds were spilling over with flowers and fruit, and there were still butterflies and goldfinches darting through the air. Ed liked the way the smell of wet earth mixed with Steed's distinctive scent, and he liked the way Steed's moans and sighs harmonized with the buzz of bees in the clover. Afterward, he loved kissing Steed's nose to soothe his worry about squashing the fledgling marigolds, and most of all, he loved picking Steed a handful of raspberries, though he barely avoided giving himself a new and unwanted piercing with their thorns. The air is thin now, and just a bit too chilly for any outdoor sex adventures. Steed's gone on about the cozy season, making love by the fire. And look, Ed's not going to complain about the way his boyfriend's bare skin looks in the firelight. It's fucking fantastic, actually. But there's something unnerving about being forced indoors after a mild spring and a hot, lazy summer. Ed can feel a change coming, and he's not sure it's the kind he likes. Steed kneels and rustles through some large green foliage. He hisses as his bare hands hit something prickly, and then he seems to find what he's looking for. He yanks, grunts, and then his arms emerge from the leaves holding a large, orange squash of some sort. That's not a turnip, mate. Obviously. Cucurbita pepo, a pumpkin, if you will. Steed cradles the enormous squash like it's a brand new baby lamb, brushing stray leaves off its ridged surface. This should be much easier to carve than a turnip, I think. He'll make a fine jack-o'-lantern, or whatever John calls it. Well, when the crew comes around and we've got the wrong kind of veggie lit up on our doorstep, I'm blaming you, Ed teases, grabbing the pumpkin from Steed and starting back toward the kitchen door. It's a surprisingly heavy gourd, symmetrical, shockingly orange. Ed doesn't remember planting these, but Steed's gardening philosophy seems to be the more the merrier. Whatever he's doing, it's working. Steed's had remarkable luck in the garden, and it's been wonderful to watch him dive into something so passionately. Steed talks about his plants the same way he used to talk about his ship, full of energy and enthusiasm, even when absolutely nothing is going to plan. And, truth be told, not much has gone to plan here. Not that there was much of a plan to begin with. Step one, find an out-of-the-way house. Step two, rid house of a surprisingly stubborn stench. Step three, become innkeepers. Step three hasn't quite happened yet. They're definitely past step two, and maybe if they had thought about it for longer, they would have picked a slightly larger house in step one, in slightly better repair. As it is, they're going to need to build up and out to get a real inn going. For now, it's really just a kitchen, two bedrooms, and a living/dining room, which Steed optimistically calls reception. Steed's also pretty sure they can be innkeepers with just the one spare room. In fact, he has a whole notion about a network of spare rooms that people can rent out for as little or as long as they like. On his last trip through with the Revenge, Frenchie tried to talk to Steed about the potential pressure this would put on the already tenuous housing market in the Caribbean, but sometimes it's best to just let Steed spin these things out and burn off some energy. Thing is, Ed isn't really in much of a hurry to get to step three. They've got plenty of treasure hidden under the floorboards to keep them afloat, and Ed is enjoying his retirement. On any given day, he can choose the projects he wants to pick up around the house. Don't ask him about the unfinished dining chairs. That's none of your business. And spend a few hours tinkering and puttering around before going to fish for their supper. The most elaborate plans Ed has to make these days involve what sort of roleplay he and Steed are going to get up to on Saturday nights. And even then, Steed normally develops the main storyline so he and Ed can improvise around it. Ed is as relaxed as he's ever felt in his life. In fact, he's so relaxed that it's making him nervous. Steed sets the pumpkin down on the rough-hewn kitchen table. "There you are, Jack," he says to the pumpkin. Don't get all familiar with him. We're about to stab him up. Ed's brought out an assortment of knives and laid them out on the table like a surgeon. Jim insisted they take a full set from the ship's armory before the Revenge set sail. Jim also made Ed promise not to let Steed play with the switchblade, even if he made those cute bunny rabbit eyes at him. Perhaps you're right. Steed peruses the knives. I defer to your judgment here, Edward. I've had much more experience as the stabby. I thought we were switching off these days, more or less. Ed bats his eyelashes at Steed, who immediately turns pink, despite the fact that they are very much alone in the middle of fuck-off nowhere, and the fact that just last night, mid-sexy accountant roleplay, he said some of the filthiest things Ed has ever heard. Ed forgets about the knives for a moment and puts a hand behind Steed's pink ear. They kiss, and Ed can taste the cold on Steed's lips. He can still smell last night's fire in his hair. In their first few weeks, even a light chest kiss like this one would inevitably lead to grinding up against each other, which would inevitably lead to tearing each other's clothes off, which of course would lead to sex, which obviously would lead to phenomenal, earth-shattering orgasms for the both of them. As the days have grown shorter, the spark between them hasn't cooled so much as it's mellowed. Steed no longer wakes him in the middle of the night, desperate for Ed's touch. They're getting more sleep. They're spending more time learning each other's idiosyncrasies, talking about the past and the future. They're taking walks and reading aloud and cooking meals together. It makes sense that things would go this way. If Ed kept feeling the way he felt the night of Calypso's birthday, with his heart beating so hard in his chest it could have drowned out the sound of cannon fire, he probably would have combusted by now. It makes sense. It must be normal. And yet, Ed can't help looking for meaning in it. He can read the clouds as clearly as letters on a page, but this is something he hasn't sussed out yet. It nags at him at the most inconvenient fucking moments. Like the hour before the sun sets, when everything is beautiful and glowing and somehow fading at the same time, and Ed feels helpless and empty, even though his life is so, so full. Steed is staring at him with a little head tilt, asking, "Darling, is everything all right?" "Yeah, of course. Let's stab this bastard pumpkin till his guts pop out." Ed grins and picks up one of the sharpest daggers. He grabs the pumpkin stem and tilts it, looking for the right angle to start jabbing, when he sees it. 8 legs. Bulbous little body. Ed sucks in a breath, ready to scream. And then the fucker jumps off the pumpkin right onto Ed's sleeve. That's when the screaming actually starts. Ed is screaming and brandishing a knife, so Steed, reasonably, starts screaming as well, and presumably the spider is screaming too, if spiders know how to scream. Ed has just enough presence of mind to shout, "Spider!" And Steed, handsome, brave Steed, swings into action, brushing the assailant off of Ed's shirt and onto the table. Ed and Steed are both breathing heavily by the time the spider has been adequately detained under a port glass. Ed stares it down in what he hopes is a very intimidating manner. "Ed," Steed says hesitantly, "I'd offer to dispatch her for you, but I know that as retired pirates, we've turned our backs on all the killing and maiming, and..." "That doesn't apply to spiders," Ed says, a bit more frantically than he intended. "Oh, well then." Without another word, Steed turns the glass upright, covers it with his hand, and takes the spider out back to do the big job where Ed doesn't have to witness it. Ed turns the handle of the knife around and around in his hand, considering. What was it that he'd said to Jim? "All love dies." And Jim didn't believe him. Jim, who had lost nearly everyone they loved once, and then nearly lost the rest when Ed became the Kraken. So how did they still have so much hope? Why does Ed find it so easy to believe the worst is coming? When he looks up, Steed is back, and Steed is... bleeding? "Babe!" Ed rushes to take Steed's hand, where he has a clean but nasty gash across his palm. Turns out the spider was a bit more tenacious than I expected, and the glass was a tad slippery. Ed tuts a little and leads Steed to a kitchen stool. He fetches the water jug and one of Steed's most threadbare shirts and begins to tear a strip of fabric from the hem. Steed winces, and Ed knows it's not from the pain. "Love, you know this one's got a hole in it already." "I thought you liked it when I showed a bit of skin." "Fucking flirt." "Always. But I also like it when your insides stay put. Now, hold this." Ed cleans the wound, which is pretty small for all of Steed's bleeding. He holds Steed's warm hand in his as he wraps the bandage and ties it tight. Then he raises Steed's hand and kisses each knuckle, gently, lightly, knowing his beard is probably tickling Steed's fingers. Steed bites his lip and giggles. It's moments like this when Ed's fears melt away and he feels purpose-built to the task of caring for this one lunatic man. "Better?" Ed asks. "Yes, thank you." Steed looks down at the bandage and back up at Ed. "Before, it seemed like there was something on your mind." "Ah, well." Ed's wheels start turning again, coming up with ways to divert the conversation away from things that could only hurt Steed if he spoke them aloud. "You know what I always say. Do you really want to talk this through? We could just carve this fucker and forget about it." Steed stares him down, and Ed can see he's not going to escape this time. So he stands and starts to pace a little, just to feel the blood moving in his veins. "Lately, I've been feeling..." he begins, before realizing he doesn't even have a word to describe what he's been feeling. "Melancholy?" Steed supplies. Ed stops pacing and looks out the kitchen window at the fading light before turning back to Steed. "I guess. Not like before we met. And not like that other time. Don't want you to worry it's like that. But just a bit down." "I'm not surprised." Steed's voice is honeyed with sympathy. "I often find that, with the changing of the seasons, I feel a bit lost. A little sad. And you and I are both what some might call sensitive souls." Ed is about to object on instinct, because who in their right mind has ever called him sensitive? And then he remembers that his old life is gone. The only version of himself that matters is the one right here in this kitchen. The rest are just shadows. Steed finally stands up from the stool, crosses the minuscule kitchen, smaller than any ship's galley, and wraps his arms around Ed's waist, careful of his bandaged hand. Ed puts his arms around Steed's shoulders, breathes him in. "What if we get stuck in this house all winter and you realize you hate me?" Ed's voice feels small and strained in his throat. "We won't get stuck in this house. I'll build an ingenious tunnel system so we can visit town every day if we like." Ed laughs into Steed's shoulder. "What if you get bored with me?" "How could I get bored with you when you're more interesting than all the books I've ever read?" "What about the ones you haven't read?" "Those too." "What if we get angry with each other?" Steed pulls back now, brushes a strand of Ed's hair behind his ear. "We might. I don't know. But I'd rather make up with you than with anyone else." When Ed kisses Steed, he tastes the first rain of spring and the first strawberries of summer. He tastes sawdust and sweat, heat and desire. But he also feels the strength of Steed's arms around him, and tastes the last of the Halloween sunset melting on his tongue. "I love you," Steed says. "No matter what. Now let's carve that poor bastard on the table." Steed isn't much help in the pumpkin carving department. Not with a bandaged hand, anyway. He does, however, have quite a few opinions about the design of the thing. Under Steed's direction, Ed carves two beady eyes, a scary, downturned mouth, and a triangle nose. Steed stands back to admire Ed's work and immediately starts to giggle. "It's supposed to be scary," Ed complains. "What's so funny?" "You know who it looks like?" Steed is bursting with laughter, pressing a hand to his mouth. Ed steps back, scowling. And there it is. Those little eyes, that smug sneer, and, most importantly, a hole where the nose should be. "Oh, fuck me, it's Ricky Baines," Ed shouts, but he's laughing too. When Ed looks out the window, the sky has already turned shades of black and purple, and he's reminded again how time seems to pass so easily with Steed. Soon, the pumpkin is sitting on the front porch with a couple of additions. Steed found a little candle to light it up from the inside, and Ed stabbed it in the head with one of Jim's knives, which he left sticking out of the side for good measure. Inside, Ed and Steed are cooking enough to feed an army, or a ship full of hungry pirates, at any rate. When there's a loud rapping at the door, they both go to answer. Trick or treat! It's Archie, of course, with Frenchie and Olu and Jim and Roach and all the rest behind her. I'll have you know that I have no idea what that means and no intention of finding out, Steed retorts. Come on in, Ed says, beckoning the crew inside. Wee John is the last one in the door. He hands off a pair of black wool mittens to Ed, a gift for the coming winter. Ed is so grateful he could hug him, so he does. Turns out Wee John is a fucking incredible hugger. What's up with the funny-looking turnip on the porch? John asks. Long story, Ed replies, before closing the door to keep in the warmth. Later, after everyone has either settled into the spare room or gone back down to the ship, Ed offers to put away the last of the dishes while Steed gets ready for bed. When Ed comes into the bedroom, Steed has built up the fire a little higher than usual. He's already tucked in, blankets covering everything but his bare shoulders, and he's lying on Ed's side of the bed. Kept it warm for you? He gives Ed a look. That look. And Ed is already out of his clothes and diving under the covers before Steed can say another word. That night, as Steed moves inside him by the light of the fire, under a blanket so warm they might as well be in the tropics, Ed feels the difference between being caught and being held. Each breath brings them closer to a new season, and he knows, even as the days grow short and the leaves turn to dust, that he'll have someone to hold him through the longest, darkest nights. The end.
I won't heal you. I won't heal you.